It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
We'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins. He's on the telephone with us. Cecil, a tough act to follow, a groundhog. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great.
Are you
doing well?
Do you
hope you are.
I'm doing fine. Have you seen your shadow this morning, Cecil?
Not quite.
Okay.
I have seen a cup of coffee.
Well, good for you. Good for you. Not to make light of serious topics we typically talk about on Let's Talk Legal. And we were talking, I guess, the last time we were all joined together about injunction orders and more importantly, domestic violence protection orders. I don't know if we're going to continue that conversation or what you have in store for us today, but I'll yield my time to you.
I think we'll completely shift gears today, and we can certainly come back to that that topic at a later time, no problem.
Sure.
What I kind of wanted to review today with you, Mike, is just it's to we lawyers a fairly straightforward topic, but to the general public, it is a topic that there's a lot of intrigue and a lot of questions about. And that's the question of, you know, what happens if I do not have a last will and testament?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if I die without a will? A lot of folks just do not think that they need a will. They might say to themselves, well, you know, I don't really have a very large estate, or even if I do have some assets, I don't necessarily need to be too concerned where they go. I assume that they all go, you know, to my wife. Or I assume that they go to my child, things of that nature. And so I want to kind of demystify those assumptions and talk about that. Now, we begin, Michael, very clearly with the concept that if you have a written will, either typewritten, that is appropriately noticed, appropriately witnessed, and notarized, and or, you know, a holographic will, which is written completely in your handwriting and is signed and dated, if you have a written document and if it satisfies the requirements of a last will and testament, then that document is going to govern to the exclusion of any laws of the state of North Carolina. But when a family comes in and they say that, absolutely, my loved one just did not have a will.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think he had a will. We've looked high and low. We haven't found anything. We just don't think that there exists a written document. Then that estate is going to be what we call in North Carolina intestate. I-N-T-E-S-T-A-T-E, intestate. And, of course, it's going to then be administered according to the laws of the state of North Carolina. And one of the first things that's going to need to happen is obviously, well, who is going to be or who is going to wear that hat that we talk about called the executor? Because after all, there is no last will and testament. There is no appointment of an executor in writing.
Right.
And so the first question is going to be who can go to the clerk of superior court and take care, qualify as the administrator of the estate. And, of course, as one would expect, the North Carolina statutes give us guidance there.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a priority. And the priority begins with, you know, if for some reason there is a spouse, then they have a priority. If for some reason there is no spouse, then we look to see whether or not there are children. The concern there, of course, is that sometimes there's more than one child, two or three children, let's say, and there's nothing further that we can, that the statute can do other than say that a child has a priority, but it can't tell us which child. So we have to get the clerk to determine of the two or of the three children, which child is going to best serve the estate and qualify as administrator. So it is true that the family has some priority to qualify as the administrator of the estate, but it's just not real clear a lot of times which family member.
Can I stop you there, Cecil, and ask you this question? Listeners may be wondering this. The way you just illustrated that example, the surviving spouse may be selected by the clerk to be the administrator. Could that spouse who has been chosen by the clerk defer to one of her children or her children or his children? Or is it stuck on that spouse, what the clerk says? Can they, in other words, can they say, I don't want it, but my kids can, my daughter can handle this?
They can. They can. This particular section of our discussion concerning the appointment of the administrator is all within the discretion of the clerk,
mm-hmm.
following the North Carolina statutes, that can also be by agreement of the parties. And
okay.
So, you know, if the three children agree that, well, you know, Sally's the oldest, she's the closest, she lives in town, we other two agree that Sally should handle it,
yeah.
then that's a mighty good thing. And that's a great place for a file to be able to start. The problem, of course, is when they can't agree.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if there is no spouse, which is sometimes the case, and no children, then we would look to the parents if there are any parents living.
Hmm.
And then, of course, the question becomes, well, parent, does that mean the dad or does that mean the mom?
Yeah.
And, of course, the statute, again, is not completely clear. Well, the statute is clear. It's just that that we have to determine how will the estate be best served, either by the father or by the mother. Keep in mind they could be divorced. They could live in separate states.
Mm-hmm.
And so they both are in priority because they both are a parent, be it the mother or be it the father, but the clerk of court is going to need to determine who is going to be, who would be appointed that would be in the best interest of the estate. So again, Michael, what you're beginning to see is that when you do not have a last will and testament right out of the box, you know, here we go, there are some questions. And questions can translate into time delays, and certainly into increased cost.
That's exactly what the takeaway I'm getting from the way you're describing this, Cecil, is the fact that if you had your will in place, all of these complications and time-consuming efforts would be for naught. If you have your will, you're good to go. A listener may wonder, well, how long does it take if I go to Harvell and Collins to draw up a will properly with the witnesses there and everything buttoned up so that we're good to go and eventually we're all going to die? But having our life plan in place rather than leave it up to a clerk of the court who I don't even know and statutes, North Carolina statutes, which I'm not even familiar with. A lot of time and effort seems to be used in the latter, just have a will in place and you're good to go.
Correct.
Right?
And we're just getting going, Mike. Okay.
Just getting warmed up.
Let's go through a couple of things here. The next thing that the North Carolina statutes are going to do when we die with no will is distinguish between real property, which is land, condominium, apartment, whatever it happens to be that we own, that we have title to, land, real property,
mm-hmm.
and personal property, which is kind of everything else. Personal property, many times people think of that in terms of, you know, personal effects like furniture, jewelry,
yeah.
rugs, artwork, things like that. But personal property is also bank accounts, stocks, bonds, anything that we have in the personal property standpoint in that area of law. So there's personal property and there's real property. The next question that becomes important is, and we diagram this out, by the way, Mike, in every single file that we ever have handled and ever will handle, which is, well, now tell me about the family, and very, very specifically. Now, if for some reason there is no spouse and there are no children, then the estate would pass to the parent. We see these files, Michael, I'm so sorry to say, in sometimes tragic circumstances.
Sure.
Where a 20-year-old is in an accident, or maybe it's an older lady or gentleman, you mm-hmm. know, in their 30s or 40s, and they just never got married. They don't have any children, but they still have a parent or maybe both parents still living.
Right.
So if there is no spouse and if there are no children, then the estate, both real property and personal property, will pass up to the parent. Now, let's add an equation here. Suppose you do have a spouse, but you do not have any children.
Right.
Okay, now this one surprises clients. At this point, many clients would think, well, everything will go to me, the spouse, because after all, we were married.
Yes.
Well, that is not the law in North Carolina. The estate is split between the spouse and the living parent or parents.
Wow.
Now, this is when there are no children.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are no children, then, of course, the first $50,000 of personal property will go to the spouse, and one half of the remainder would be split between the parents and the spouse. That's on personal property. The same is true with regard to real property, where half of the property, the real property, goes to the parents, and half of the real property goes to the spouse. So, Michael, that's a real different distribution than most folks in our office would make, because when folks get married, keep in mind, the statute doesn't say whether you've been married a year or two, or whether you've been married, 15 or 20 years. If you're married,
you're married,
and you have no children, and you have a living parent and or parents, then your parents are going to be beneficiaries, inheritance, if you will, in your estate if you die without a will. Your last will and testament, to contrast, Michael, many times, as one would expect, would say that I leave everything to my spouse.
Right, right.
It would not necessarily leave things to the parent, and certainly, and maybe not, at a 50% distribution. A child might leave something to a parent and the rest to their spouse, but 50% is a pretty, that's a right high percentage, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. And the way you describe that, Cecil, I have a will, but if I didn't have a will, you described my living conditions. I am married for 28 years to my wife. We have no children, and we both are, our mothers are alive. So if I died without a will, whose mothers would get some of our stuff? Would it be my mother or my wife's mother or both?
Well, it depends on, of course, who dies.
I died. My wife survives.
Yeah. Then it would be, of course, that your wife would receive half, and your mother would receive
the
other half.
Okay, I understand.
Okay.
Yeah, there may be listeners out there in the same boat, but I mean, again, you should get your will, and you should probably contact Harvell and Collins now to do that, because it sounds like it can get really complicated and strung out. Cecil, am I reading that correctly?
Well, you are wonderful to allow your personal circumstances to get put out there for us to discuss this morning, Mike.
Yeah,
I mean, wouldn't that be a shock if you didn't have a will?
Yes.
And God forbid something happened to you, and your wife is in my office and is suddenly told, well, by the way, half of the estate passes to my mother, and only half of the real property passes to you.
Yeah.
What a shock.
Very shocking. Very shocking. Yeah. Eye-opening.
Right.
And life-changing. Let's hold that thought, Cecil, and we'll take our first break here. And boy, oh boy, if you don't have a will, that should be one of the boxes you check off this year. And a good start would be to call Harvell and Collins today, 252-726-9050. Go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll continue this important conversation after this quick, brief timeout. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal, and we're joined with Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell. Good morning. Continuing our conversation, I'm flabbergasted here. I'm doing 10 things at one time here. Cecil, we're talking about wills and the importance of having a will, so as you don't get into this convoluted thing with the clerk of the court and not having a will and just surprising your surviving relatives. Let's continue this important conversation.
Mike, let's do. Now, we're going to get a little bit thicker into the weeds here.
Good.
In a bit. If we have time, if not, we can talk about this at a later program.
Sure.
But I don't want our listeners to be the ones that are really cluing in and really listening to every word that you and I are talking about. you know, when we say that half of the estate goes to, like, for instance, in your factual scenario, half of the estate goes to your wife,
right,
God forbid something happened to you, and the other half to your mother,
right,
who is still living, and that's because you have no children.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, that's for assets, both real property, land, as well as personal assets, banks, accounts, CDs, any mm-hmm. kind of monies that you all have, that are not otherwise titled jointly. If your home is titled in the name of you and your wife, then we're not going to have half of that home passed to your mother,
right,
because it was titled jointly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of moves us, or can move us, into a whole nother program that we've talked so very much on this program about, you know, we at Harvell and Collins can do you, you know, a wonderful will, you know, any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
They, by the way, aren't nearly as expensive as people sometimes think they are. They can be many times at our office just, you know, a couple of $100s, okay, a last will and testament.
Yeah.
Less than what we spend at, you know, Walmart on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. But the bottom line is that we also have to look at the way in which your assets are titled. Do they have registrations with them of beneficiaries? Are they joint? Things of that nature, because all of that is also going to dovetail in with this conversation that you and I just had about the estate being 50-50 between your wife and between your mother. The next lawyer question is going to be, well, but tell me about the assets and how they are titled. And then when your wife says, well, we own the house jointly,
yes,
both of our names are on it, then that is going to take the home, the real property, or that particular real property, you know, into a different category. So I wanted to kind of mention that since we had kind of honed in on that 50-50 between a surviving spouse,
yeah,
and a parent.
You know, you touched on something important, too, and I hearken back to previous conversations we've had together, including when Wes is in here. You talk mm-hmm. about sitting down in front of a lawyer at Harvell and Collins. In the back of my mind, I hear Wes talking, be cautious about the dock in a box that you buy online, thinking you've got it covered, buying a cheap, you know, what you think is a satisfactory will, suit it for the state in which you live. Sometimes it isn't always the case. It's a real buyer beware of what you're buying online, thinking you're covered, versus taking the time and energy to sit before an attorney such as yourself and draw out a proper will.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that, Mike. And of course, you know, we all, maybe one, another perspective is, you know, we all do what we do. You, of course, are a radio personality and a speaker on the radio and a number of subjects, hosting guests every single day. And you do that very, very well. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I, of course, this morning am here at my home, and I know that at some point today, an appliance repair person is coming by to fix the dishwasher. I wouldn't even know how to begin to do that, okay?
Yeah.
Fortunately, it's a small part, but they say that they will come today and install that new part. So a lawyer who does this kind of law is absolutely going to be, you're going to get the full gamut of experience and knowledge. And as I already mentioned, it many times just more thorough. There are other issues that have to be looked at. Not only who are the beneficiaries, what are the nature of the assets, but how are they titled? Is there any kind of recognition of the titling that's inconsistent with the last will and testament? We run into that a whole lot, where titling of assets is inconsistent with the testamentary intent. So the lawyer is going to take a more global approach in looking at the file, you know, what are the assets, what are the objectives of the client, what documents do we need, and then finally, are there any issues with regard to titling of assets that would be inconsistent with the documents that we have? It's a detailed process. It's second nature to folks like Wes and myself and mm-hmm. the other lawyers at our office, Andrew and Sam Morris and Julia Sakely. It's second nature to those of us that are lawyers that are in this area of practice. But it's it's not something that is, you know, a doc in a box. It just simply isn't.
Yeah. And it's something that can be easily done and achieved, if you make an appointment with Harvell and Collins, it can be easily achieved. I am constantly amazed when we hear of people in the news, well off who die without a will. It's just remarkable that they've made it that far in their career or whatever, and they die and they have these huge assets and they left no will at all.
I don't know for a fact that this is the case, but I so loved her. Aretha Franklin, I think, might be one of those folks that I read about or heard about.
Yeah, we hear it each month. And Andrew Foster, mm-hmm. when he comes in here, often does a case study on that. Again, it's something that is easily achieved. You can easily get a will done properly if you just take the time to call Harvell and Collins. Let's take our final break on that note, and we'll come back, and I'll give you the final closing time we have left in our segment today. But if you'd like to reach the folks at Harvell and Collins, Cesar Harvell and Wes Collins, call today, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Do it today. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll come back with Cecil's closing statement for this important topic of wills. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal, and Cecil Harvell has been joining us this morning on the phone. Thank you for coming on this morning to talk about this very important topic of wills. We have about 2 minutes or so remaining in today's show.
Okay. The next factual scenario would be just to alter the one that was similar to your family, Mike, ever so slightly, which is that, yes, there is a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
There are no children,
right.
but there also just happens to be that there are no living parents.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have a living mom, and that's wonderful.
Yep.
But at some point, you know, those facts are going to change for you like they do for all of us.
Sure.
Okay? How old is your mom?
85.
85. Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And my mother-in-law is 90, so, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, you have the living parent right now, but at some point, you know, that for some folks that will not be the case.
Right.
And if there is no living parent, but there's a spouse and no children again,
right.
then, of course, now that very fact is going to alter the distribution so that the spouse will receive 100% of everything,
mm-hmm.
both real and personal.
Okay.
There are no children.
Yep.
There are no parents. And but there does happen to be a living spouse. The next scenario is when there are children and there is a spouse,
mm-hmm.
The estate is split between the spouse and the children. The parents are no longer involved because there's now a spouse, a lineal line.
Right.
But what our listeners need to hear in these last few seconds is that do not assume that your estate goes 100% to your spouse. It does not. It is split under certain scenarios between you, the surviving spouse, and your children.
Okay. Good conversation. And we shed a lot of light on this important topic. And we thank you, Cecil. And continue this conversation at a later time.